Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
For more Microsoft webcasts, please go to microsoft.com/webcast. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome you to our TechNet webcast entitled Troubleshooting Microsoft Forefront Client Security. I would like to introduce today's presenter, Sean Travers. Sean is a TechNet presenter for the Microsoft Corporation. Sean, you now have the floor.
Thank you so much, Craig. I am truly excited about today's webcast. And for those of you who attended yesterday's overview of Forefront Client Security, you'll be happy to know we're going to get into some more detail on some of the specifics of what issues you might come up with as you're installing and operating Forefront Client Security. So it's going to build on what you've already learned. If you have a limited knowledge, I'm going to do a little bit of just quick overview at the beginning here, because I think we're going to have plenty of time today. I'm going to get through this information quickly for you, make it short, sweet, fill it with lots of good nuggets that'll help you out during your installation and deployment process, as well as during the overall operation of Forefront as you work towards your solution. So I think we're going to have a great set of content. I think you're all going to be pleasantly pleased, and be sure to attend again tomorrow, tomorrow's session on deploying Forefront Client Security, and then we have a two-part actually, so we'll have that same session the second part of that session on Thursday. All right, so let's go ahead and get started here. I've got a lot of good information to impart to you. So first things first, we're going to cover essentially the troubleshooting the installation phase at the beginning here. And as you might know or should know from yesterday's session, Forefront Client Security is currently in beta. So we have not finalized this product yet. In fact, it won't be finished until the second quarter of 2007. All right, so we're looking at somewhere between the April and the end of June, all right, of next year. So we're a little ways out yet, but what you can do is go out and download the public beta today on microsoft.com/forefront, then just go out and get the client security beta, all right? And what you'll do is take that and try to troubleshoot and install that. And so as you do that, you'll have a good test environment and be ready to go when the product finally does launch, again, in the second quarter of 2007. We're also going to go through some server troubleshooting and client troubleshooting. So there are two different components, main components, right, to Forefront Client Security, which I'll refer to just as FCS for the remainder of this session. So FCS has two components, the server side, the client side. The client side, of course, takes care of all the malware protection, right? So we protect with a Forefront Client service. We protect against viruses, worms, Trojan horses. These are all considered malware and customary, right? So we're pretty familiar with those. We also do protect against things like rootkits. So for years, people have been asking, what is Microsoft doing to help me against rootkits? And rootkits, for those of you who don't know, essentially run at the kernel level, and they give a remote access to an attacker that they might be able to get access to anything on that machine. And so frequently, these are common problems because we have difficulty having any tool that will actually detect the installation of a rootkit. All right, so now we have a tool to detect rootkits as well as, you know, as I mentioned, viruses, worms, and Trojan horses. And so we're going to talk about, you know, what we can better do to troubleshoot if we do have issues with Forefront Client Security, because something that's that fundamental to our security of our environment, we need to be able to understand how we can work with that tool ongoing. So if you have experience with these are some of the components on the server side here. One is Microsoft Operations Manager. Another one is SQL Server 2000 or 2005, right? And if you have experience with network security in general, that's going to be helpful as well. So a lot of you might be saying, well, what the heck is this? If Forefront Client Security is a client-side install, what's all the need for Microsoft Operations Manager and SQL Server and all these other components? Well, these components essentially bring a reporting aspect, right? And so what we found out from talking to customers is that people want to be able to see what's going on into the security side of the client machine. And so when you have a malware, issue installed on a machine, you want to get that information reported back to a central location. You don't want to troubleshoot on an individual basis. And so we bring all that information back to a server side, and we store it in SQL Server, and then we use MOM to interface and interact with all these different security alerts. And so essentially what you're going to get back are very specific targeted security alerts about what's going on security-wise on your client machine. And when I say client machines, it could be a server as well, right? We can install Forefront there and get reporting information back about issues with our server machine. So it doesn't just, we're not exclusive to say Windows XP and Windows 2000 Professional, Service Pack 2, and Windows Vista, right? As we get ready to launch that product here, we can also get security information back about our servers, right? The same way. All right. So let's talk about those installation problems first. First off, we want to do all we can before we get started to minimize the problems. Watching this webcast is a great first step, but it's not going to be enough. All right, you want to also go through the documentation that's already out there. And as of this public beta, we have a good deal of information out there on the web. One of the main things we have is a planning and architecture guide, right? And so you can use this guide to identify, okay, what are the different server components I'm going to need? We've already talked about a few of those, MOM and SQL. You also want to look at something like Active Directory, which is going to be a big component, a big part of this. And then also look at what you need on the client side. So it'll talk about what is the policy planning procedures you need to go through before you start to deploy this. What are some of the accounts that you're going to need on the server side? What kind of topology is going to work out? What kind of firewall issues might I come up against? All right, so these documents go through in great detail some of the architectural planning that needs to be done ahead of time. Right, a lot of that is already in these guides. It saves us a lot of time and energy. Now we're going to go through more of this as well tomorrow and the next day in the deploying parts 1 and 2 of this webcast series. So you'll want to check those out because we'll actually walk through a little bit about what's in the guides and also some other stuff that I can relate to. So the second thing you want to look at besides the planning and architecture guide is you'll also want to look at the deployment guide, right? All right, so the deployment guide walks through what kind of hardware you're going to need on the client side, what kind of server hardware requirements there are, from anywhere from hard drive space that you'll need. And it can be pretty substantial for all these signatures and things we're going to be pulling down from Windows Update, say to your Windows Software Update Services server, which, by the way, is another server component that you're going to need in order to install this. So there are a number of components, and that's why we go through this to make sure you're clear on the steps. Also, you'll want to look at information about what memory requirements there are, what kind of network connectivity you need to the servers, what domains they should be in. All this kind of information is contained within this deployment guide. And in fact, what I'm going to do here, and there's also some release notes. For the beta, of course, there are release notes. And when we release this product, you'll see additional release notes. These are always critical. I know sometimes we just go and try to install, and then we look at the release notes later. It really can be helpful if you look at them ahead of time. It's a great best practice, give you a good idea of what issues are known as of that release, right? Let's go ahead and do a quick thing here. I'm going to share out my desktop. I'm just going to take a look at one of my Internet Explorer windows here, and I just want you to take a look at exactly where that link is for a lot of this documentation, okay? And so if you go to Microsoft.com/TechNet/ClientSecurity, all one word, /default.mspx, or you can just eliminate that last part, you can see on this page, about midway down here, we have three main links, evaluation, deployment, and operations. These are the documents that we just referred to, the architectural guide, the operations guide, and the deployment guide, all right? So you'll want to check out these three links. You can see I've been there as well. So Microsoft.com/TechNet/ClientSecurity. All right. The beta should be pretty easy to find, again, from the Forefront site, the main site, Microsoft.com/Forefront. You can get the beta download today. Okay, so what next? Well, let's talk about some specific issues that we can give you a heads up on. All right, and I love this. We give you, frequently we don't do this, right? We don't give you the nuggets ahead of time that are going to save you a lot of time and energy. So all that research and news groups and online and all this other stuff, we're going to save you a lot of that time and energy right now. All right, so some of this information you can't even find in some of the guides. I'm going to try to give you a heads up in my installation process and what things I came up against. So first things, reporting services issues. Essentially, the documentation that you'll find on those links that I just gave you provide for two separate types of installation, either a single server install where you put all of the server components in one machine, right? That's MOM, SQL, WSUS, Active Directory, all that stuff on one machine. And they also talk. We also talk about in the deployment guide another installation option, which is to have three separate servers, right? And the three separate servers comprise the three main components of FCS on the server end. One of those components is the SQL server, right? And that contains the reporting services, right? Now, the reporting services, we've already found out that there's going to be some issues potentially. The main issue here tends to be permissioning problems, all right? So you're going to run up against permissioning problems where you'll be using an account to install these components and find out that, in fact, that account is not optimal. So let me tell you how to do it the right way first. Essentially, I'm going to outline in the next two slides here two main accounts that you'll want to use. All right, so let's start with the first account on this slide. First account must be a domain account. This has been an issue we've seen with a few of the preliminary installs, is that people are using local accounts to configure, install, and work with reporting services. So SQL Server 2005 is what you want to use. SQL Server 2005 reporting services need to be installed. The account you should use to install those, install that reporting service, and work with it should be a domain account. All right, so create a separate account. You can call whatever you want. Call it SQL Reporting. Call it FCS SQL Rep. Whatever you want to call it, give it a nice friendly name and use that account for configuring those services. Now, when you use that account and walk through the installation of SQL Reporting Services, you want to make sure that of course that account can be used for all configuration of all the reporting services. On the flip side, you also need to install onto that server the FCS reporting role. Right? So the Forefront Client Security reporting role is one of the roles that you install with FCS. That should also use that account, right? The SQL domain level account that I already talked about. So you'll walk through a wizard, install the FCS reporting role onto the SQL Server 2005 reporting server. All right. Now, you could, and there's nothing that's going to stop you from using a local network service account, right, to install and configure reporting services. We're not going to give you any log event errors. We're not going to give you any information that's not the right way to go, and that's why we have this session today, talk about things that are going to come up that you're not going to be able to troubleshoot very easily. So be sure to use a domain account when configuring FCS in the three-server topology, okay? Now, another issue, and this is going to be, we're going to be talking about our second account here, is that frequently we found that people are using the wrong account to manage all their FCS servers. In fact, what they're doing is they're not giving permissions appropriately. So let me explain what I mean. There is this MOM-DAS account. All right. Now, if you haven't worked with Microsoft Operations Manager before, you want to be aware that there's a special account that's used to manage the data access server component of MOM. All right, that account must be used for all service accounts when installing FCS roles. All right, so for all of your FCS roles, you'll use this MOM data access server account. So that account needs to have, and this is the gotcha, administrator permissions on each server that you're using in the FCS environment. Right? So for each FCS role, you have to add the mom dad's account as a local admin. So on your SQL, on your domain controller, right? Your domain controller that's going to be that you're going to be using to manage your FCS accounts. On the SQL server, right? That's going to handle the management collection, the reporting information. On the distribution server. So now we actually get an insight into the three main roles. I've alluded to them already. Here we give them specific names. One is called reporting database. That's one of the FCS roles. The other one is management collection and reporting. And the final one is the distribution role for FCS. So on each server that has any one of these roles, right, you want to install the mom-dad's account as a local admin. So that's been a pretty big gotcha as well. So these mom dad's account restrictions apply regardless of whether you install a single server or multi-server topology. Now, one thing I should say, since we already talked about that SQL Server 2005 account, that other account in the last slide, that account does not need to be the same account as the mom dad's account. All right. In fact, you should have two separate domain level accounts for that. Now, in a single server topology, let's say we only had one server down here, and it's getting a little messy, but let's say all those were combined into one server. This is only recommended, by the way, for product evaluation purposes. We're not going to recommend a single server deployment in production. If you have, and that also immediately you're probably thinking to yourself, holy cow, I'm a small business. I have one small business server. How is this going to work for me? Well, in fact, it probably will not work very well for you. It is possible to do this. We anticipate people will do it. But when we're talking about small businesses, we really recommend using Windows Live OneCare and some of the other consumer solutions on the business side. They'll work fine. You won't get the additional reporting information back up. You won't have to worry about, though. On the other hand, you won't have to worry about a reporting database, installing MOM. You won't have to worry about some of these other solutions. All right. So, and some of these other roles. In fact, what you'll have is an unmanaged, essentially, but still the same kind of security on the client side. You won't have the reporting and the management capabilities that we offer with the full FCS solution. Hope that clears things up a little bit for you. Let me get rid of some of these annotations here. Talk about that SQL Server account. So the SQL Server account, again, that's the account we talked about from the last slide. That essentially is used to manage the reporting, the database, and the management collection and reporting components of FCS. So that needs to be installed as an administrator on those two servers. All right. In a one-server topology, again, you still need to have these two accounts being local administrators on that one server. But again, that's only recommended for testing purposes. So for anybody who's looking to do this in production, when we release this product, you're going to want to go with at least a three-server topology. And you could certainly include additional servers for failover, for recoverability purposes. That's certainly appropriate. And for performance purposes, of course. What we're going through is the minimum three-server deployment is what we're talking about today. Now, we've also seen some issues when it comes to WSUS. Now, one question I frequently get here is, can I use SMS? I'm using Systems Management Server today to deploy my updates. Why can't I just get my updates down to my SMS server and push them out like I always have? That we anticipate will be fine as of the release. With the beta, however, the public beta that's out there now, you're going to want to use WSUS. That's the supported methodology today. All right, so in your test environments, just install a WSUS server, and it should be, and in fact it has to be, WSUS 2.0 Service Pack 1, which just came out not too long ago. You cannot use WSUS 3.0, which is still in beta. All right, that will not work. All right, so you're very restricted into how you get these updated signatures down to the client side. It has to be WSUS 2.0 Service Pack 1. Now, the disk storage requirements on this server can be very high. it's recommended that for WSUS in a typical production environment, you want to have at least 100 gigabytes of available disk space. That's just to hold, you know, all of the different updates that might be coming down. If WSUS doesn't have enough disk space or for whatever reason is not functioning, you can have the clients go out and get their anti-spyware definitions and anti-malware definitions that FCS is going to use from Windows Update or Microsoft Update, I should say. Right? Now, if that happens, that's okay. That is another way to go, but recommended to use WSUS so that you can be sure the updates are getting down there. You can manage that process. And so if you have your WSUS server go down temporarily, that's fine. Then they'll go out to Microsoft Update and get their updates. That happens by default, unless you specifically, in group policy, define not to do that. By default, users will automatically go out to Microsoft Update instead. If your WSUS server does go down temporarily, let them go out to Microsoft Update, and then make sure your WSUS server is offline until it's fixed. Right? So don't bring your WSUS server back in while you're troubleshooting it, because then your end users will not get their updates. Right? Because they'll go to the WSUS server, they'll see that it's there, and if they're not getting their updates because you're out of disk space or whatever, they'll just continue to wait for a new update. Does that make sense? So make sure if while you're working with and troubleshooting your WSUS server, if there are any issues with it, that you take it offline and don't let client computers connect to it. Talk a little bit about some service issues that we've seen. So if you have an issue with the MOM service, it's going to be very difficult to troubleshoot, okay? And I'm going to give you right now kind of some of the backwards troubleshooting steps that you would take to define that your MOM service is not functioning properly. So what you'll see is, in fact, if your MOM service has stopped and you're not seeing a lot of management collection reporting information, it might appear that these issues are client related, right? So during the installation of FCS, and again, we'll talk about that more in the next two parts of the series, but installation of FCS on the client side, the installation of FCS clients might succeed, and then you'll go to use the MOM administration console, and you won't see, though, any pending actions. And this will kind of be your gotcha. So when you go to use the MOM administration console, you don't see any pending actions for the FCS client that you've just installed, because normally you'd be prompted to approve those installations. That's when you can identify that perhaps there's something going on with the MOM side. Okay. So besides just during the installation of the FCS clients, you should also see MOM reporting information. So maybe when the clients appear to receive their appropriate group policies based on their membership in the OU, but no reporting data for those clients are appearing. So when you look in the MOM console and you don't see any reporting data at all for those clients, so not just approvals and things, but just no reporting data at all, well, that is also a sign. So if you look in the MOM side, the administration console, you don't see anything there, there's no updates, there's no reporting data from the clients at all, you'll be aware that probably there's something wrong with your MOM service, not with your clients. Okay? And so in order to clear up this situation, it's very easy. You just go through and restart the MOM service on the server. Obviously, try to find out why it shut down in the first place, but you'll focus your attention on the MOM side and not on the client side. That'll save you a lot of time and energy, hopefully. And then as soon as you restart the MOM service, you should see the clients popping up as pending actions, right? So it'll be pending for approval of updates. And if you've already installed the client service and approved those, then you'll start to see reporting data coming up into this console as well. All right, so let's review. So we've talked about some of the server problems. We've talked about issues related to the MOM side. We talked about issues related to permissioning issues. I should also mention one other server issue that comes up a lot, and I probably should have brought this up at the beginning, is that when you install FCS, you really want to install it in the right order. So when you go out and look at that deployment guide, make sure you follow it step by step from top to bottom. All right, because if you don't, if you install the components in the wrong order, so you install SQL Server, but don't install the reporting services, and then you go to install the FCS reporting role, well, then you're going to see, you know, all kinds of issues. But it may not always be obvious that you've just done things in the wrong order. All right, you'll see lots of log error events about failed installations. You might see log events, even a successful install, but not actually getting any data back. It could be just that you've installed things in the wrong order. So be very conscious of what order you're installing these things. And then once you install everything, make sure you boot the servers in the right order. You got to have the DC available, and then the SQL Server comes up before mom comes up, right? So mom has to be able to talk to that SQL Server. So there is a specific order for booting and installing these different components. Now, let's talk a little bit about the client side, all right? And a lot of times I get asked the question too, can I install the client without the server? Right? Do I have to get all the reporting services back? You can install Forefront Client Server security just on the client side. And then you won't get any reporting data back up. You won't get any security alerts, right, about what's going on your client side. You won't be able to centrally manage all this stuff either. All right? You're not going to have the ability to manage via group policy either. So you're going to lose a lot of functionality and a lot of what we rely on as, you know, medium to large businesses. We're not going to get that information back up. So just be cognizant of the fact, you know, that you really want to have the server side as well. It's going to really bring the full value of Forefront Client Security home. One of the issues we're seeing on the client side, coming up frequently, is that Forefront is really designed as a single solution for all of your enterprise malware protection. All right. So if you have previously installed third-party vendor antivirus, anti-spyware, any kind of client malware protection at all, those should be disabled before you install FCS on the client side. All right. So just uninstall the previous malware protection software, whatever it might be, before you move forward and install Forefront. If you install Forefront before uninstalling the other ones, you probably will not see successful installation, and it probably will be very difficult to fix, at least as of this beta. So I would really recommend getting rid of that other stuff first. All right, what else can we talk about here? So on the client side, besides you know, getting rid of other malware, be aware that Windows Defender automatically ships with Windows Vista. So besides just third-party stuff, you'll need to go and uninstall. If you're going to install Forefront Client Security under a Windows Vista machine, you want to get rid of Windows Defender. All right, that seems counterintuitive, but you do have to get rid of Windows Defender first on the client side. All right, so you can uninstall through the control panel, or you can uninstall via group policy. But either way, you've got to get rid of Windows Defender. This is just considered another component of Forefront Client Security. So we don't want to install it twice and have conflicts and competitive issues between the two. It's essentially the same technology you're getting in Forefront Client Security as Windows Defender, but then you're adding on the rootkit detection, the antivirus, the anti-worm, right? All these other components get included, and so since Windows Defender is part of that FCS install, you don't want to have it on there ahead of time. So you have to look at the vendor's documentation to find out how to uninstall other third-party stuff. I just want to give you a heads up on the Windows Defender and Vista. So that goes just as well for, you know, if you've got the malicious software removal tools and things, right? So get rid of all that stuff. Forefront is going to take care of all that for you. It's a single comprehensive solution. That's the beauty of it. That's why you want Forefront Client Security. So make sure you get rid of that other stuff. All right. Sometimes we see problems with computers receiving their policies. So once created and deployed, sometimes latency with group policy becomes an issue. This is true for all group policies, though, so it's not specific to Forefront Client Security. But if you do create or edit a policy, you know, just make sure that you're refreshing the client workstation. That might require a reboot of that machine in some cases, although generally it should not. Sometimes we're seeing that a reboot, you know, brings back those group policy settings more effectively. You can also run gpupdate/force, right, if you're on the local workstation, you have those administrator credentials. And this will force the client to reconnect to those network servers to check for and receive the latest group policy settings. All right. So because you might be asking, what are you talking about group policy for? That's how we deploy forefront client security onto the desktops. Right? We use group policy to do that. That being said, if you're using another tool, right, not using group policy to get forefront client security on the desktop, you want to make sure that that tool is getting that installation done properly as well. So if you have another methodology that you're using, you might need to stop and restart FCS services on the client in order to have group policy changes take effect later on. So this is kind of another troubleshooting gotcha is, you know, I've deployed FCS manually or through a third-party tool that I wanted to use, and that might have gotten the install done effectively, but later on when you go to group policy to make changes to FCS settings, those changes might not take effect, right? And so that, in that case, might require a restart of the FCS services on the client just to see those changes. So good best practice is install using group policy and you'll be happy in the long run, okay? So again, GP update force, then there's, you know, if you use a non-standard deployment, restart those FCS services, and if all else fails, reboot the entire client. And in those cases, then you should finally see the changes to FCS come down, right? If it's coming down from those third-party tools. So let's kind of summarize kind of some of the heads up, the gotchas that we talked about today. FCS, again, is a single comprehensive solution for client security. It's what you've been asking for a long time. It's an initial release, but it's built on fundamental technology that we've been working with for quite a while and has been deployed on millions of desktops out there. For example, you might have heard of FrontBridge. Some of it comes from there. You might have heard of, you know, some of the other anti-spyware tools that Microsoft has put out, right? This technology has all been incorporated into FCS. That way you don't have to worry about multiple deployments and multiple components. We heard complaints about that. I got too many things I got to install. Well, here's your answer, folks. You don't even have to worry about installing third-party antivirus. You get it all from Microsoft. Now, you might be asking yourself, what are some of the licensing, right? Is it free? Are you going to charge me for this stuff? Well, with FCS, with all this different components that are required, there is going to be a charge, right, for that solution, right, for this solution when it comes out. And so what you want to do is check out the pricing guides when they come out. They're not out yet, all right, but you are going to have a charge for this service, all right, because we're bringing so much together with all the great reporting capabilities and everything. It's the way to go, right? Again, FCS, just to summarize, relies on several prerequisites. SQL Server 2005 is required. MOM 2005 required. With the beta, you require WSUS. You also require an Active Directory deployment. All right. So the server-side components are going to really bring everything together for you. It's a robust, scalable deployment, and it can support with as you add additional servers, thousands of clients, but it will require a multi-server topology to make this happen. That's why you want to check out that architecture guide and the deployment guide that we showed you at the beginning. There are a variety of possibilities for deploying this and different topologies, permission checking that goes on. So that's why we go through this troubleshooting step to make sure you understand where some of the gotchas might lie and where some of the accounts are that you need to create. We're going to go through more detail on the account creation process tomorrow. We'll actually show you how to build those two main accounts we talked about. We'll show you what organizational units we recommend you put them in and how to configure that on the server end. We'll go through actually deploying, for example, the MOM FCS role, right, onto the MOM server. We'll show you how to configure SQL and for the best security and also to connect and bring all this database information back from the client. All right, so if you have other anti-spyware, anti-malware solutions, make sure you uninstall those first. And I think things are going to go very well. So watch the other two parts of the series. If you have to, come back and refresh using this part of the series. and you're going to be happier in the long run. It's going to save you a lot of time and energy later on, kind of troubleshooting what might have gone wrong during the install and the management of this solution. So I hope you got a lot of good information. I'm going to turn it back over to Craig for a minute, and please post your questions. I'm going to answer some questions right now after Craig gets done talking about the evaluation form, and we'll come back in just a minute or so. Craig?
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Sean. I got a lot of information out of that. Let's see. I would like to share some additional resources for today's program. As Sean did just mention, we are going to begin our question and answer session in just a moment. Once again, please go ahead and type your questions into the question field next to the Ask button on the bottom of your screen, and simply click that Ask button to make sure that you get all of your issues worked out. I know Sean's going to stick around. As we mentioned earlier, you can view a replay of today's live event, or you can register for upcoming events by going to www.microsoft.com/webcast. And the streaming media replay and downloadable WMV file will be available within 24 hours. Also, throughout the webcast, we had a few questions about previously recorded ones, and you can also get our previously recorded webcast at that same link, www.microsoft.com/webcast, and click on the previously recorded option. We are going to be providing a survey for today's event in just a moment, and I would like to encourage you to really take a moment to fill out this survey. The comments that you provide ultimately allow us to really create a better webcast for you, and because of that, your feedback is greatly appreciated. If you've got an idea for a webcast, or if you'd like to see some specific content developed for a webcast, you can view this link right here. You can go ahead and send in your recommendation. We will work as hard as we can to get a webcast up for you. As I just mentioned, I am going to be providing a survey for today's event. Please follow the links that are provided in your interface right now. Take a moment to complete today's webcast evaluation. Again, your comments are very valuable. I'm going to go ahead at this time and throw the floor back to Sean to go ahead and answer some of the questions that our audience had today. So, Sean, take it away.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for attending. Again, I want to reiterate what Craig said. Please do fill out that evaluation form. Let's go through a few questions. I see four in the queue right now. If you have one, please ask it now. Bill asks, does Forefront Client install and run on Vista 32 and 64-bit systems? Absolutely yes, Bill. I appreciate the question. It does install on both Vista 32 and 64-bit systems. In fact, there is more information about specific operating system requirements. In fact, it installs down to Windows 2000 Service Pack 4. All right, so, and it does include 64-bit additions up through up and down the line. All right, so Windows XP, Windows XP Service Pack 2. Oh, Bill already raised his question. I had a link I was going to post as well for more information on system requirements. And in fact, you can actually go out to that link I talked about earlier, the client security link, on the Microsoft.com/TechNet site. All right, and you can see there are a number of documents there that talk about that. Would I recommend using mom dad's account to install? I guess you're referring to, so it says, he says, Steve says, why two accounts? Is it a security issue? Yes, it is a security issue, but just in the sense that we want to go with least privilege. All right, so there's the reason we use two accounts is because the two accounts have different requirements into where they need to be a local admin. All right, so one, it requires three machines local admin. The other account only requires two machines. So in the concept of least privilege, we want to use different accounts for those because we don't want to make that same account an admin on a third machine when it doesn't need to be. So, yeah, it's just an issue of security and least privilege and kind of separating out those different roles. Since they tend to be separate admins, especially in larger environments, we tend to use separate people for, say, MOM and SQL. Okay, and so in that case, yeah, it makes sense to use two accounts. You could use one account. All right, I'll just say that. You could use one account. Will it be an upgrade possibility from beta to RTM? At this point, we don't foresee that. We're probably looking at an uninstall and a fresh install of RTM. We're bouncing around different concepts or thoughts around that, but at this point, as with many of our betas, we are going to ask, and what it looks like we're going to do is ask for an uninstall prior to putting RTM onto that machine. All right, so currently not looking at a definite upgrade path. That's why kind of what we're looking at right now is a lot of test environments out there, and that's where you want to put this. Another question. Let's see. Dave asks, can the Forefront client be used standalone? I believe I kind of addressed that during the session. It can be used standalone. Again, you're going to lose the reporting and management capabilities from a central standpoint. In general, if you want to go standalone, we really are looking for other solutions, including the Microsoft anti-spyware tool, as well as a standalone Windows Live OneCare. Windows Live OneCare handles the antivirus, protection against worms, Trojan horses. The rootkits will be incorporated into that. So you really want to use, if it's going to be standalone, you're not going to manage it centrally anyway, you might as well go for a solution that's going to be less costly for you. And that's the Live OneCare plus Defender and other tools. Okay. It sounds like there's a lot of manual running of add remove programs on each client to get it ready for Forefront, which doesn't seem to be much centralized. Well, the add remove program stuff comes in on, well, oh, I'm not sure where you're referring to. I don't think I talked a lot about manual tasks. Manual tasks are really coming in on the server end. You can totally automate the install on the client side. The manual tasks I was talking about are running like the FCS reporting services installation wizard, and that's a wizard that runs on the server side. You run it once and you're done. As far as add remove program stuff, well, you know, manually managing services and things on the server end is really all you're going to have to do. So for add and remove programs on the client side, maybe you're referring to when I was talking about uninstalling third-party tools that are already there. Well, you can uninstall those with whatever management tool you previously used to deploy them, right? So I wouldn't say there's a lot of add and remove stuff when it comes to the client side, but there is some. Certainly, there's some on the server end. So thanks for your question, Steve. Thanks for your question as well. We have one more from Steven here. Any recommendations for installing the beta in a virtual lab? In a virtual lab, the one thing you want to watch out for is just exactly what domains they're in. For example, let's say you're installing a single virtual server, and you want to put all of the FCS components onto that one virtual machine. You want to make sure that the accounts that you're using are from a local domain, right? So it has to be a local domain that virtual machine can access. All right, so if it's your test domain, that's fine, but it has to be the same domain that virtual machine is in. Okay, that has to be the same domain account that you're using is in the same domain as that machine. What else? Oh, well, networking. So if you're doing like the three server topology or more, and you're using virtual machines for that, make sure your networking is set up properly. So if you are incorporating, say, a firewall in there to try to test that out, read the deployment guide because it talks about what ports you need to have opened up. Also, the other issue I would say is a lot of times with our virtual machine environments, we're not allowing external access to Microsoft Update, and so your WSUS server has to be available in your test lab to get those updates onto it. These are some of the things that I've seen. There's probably a few other ones as well, but these are some of the main ones. Just check your networking, check your domain affiliations, and check to make sure you're getting the update. All right. What else? Let's see. Alex asked, what do I install on my Windows Vista system until my antivirus provider brings out his own version for Vista? Can I install Forefront on several clients only without server management? Sure, you can use the Forefront client security beta on your client machines as long as you're in a test environment. If you're talking about your Windows Vista systems in production, well, then in that case, you want to, move to an antivirus provider who's already got a solution. There are a number of them that are going to be out there as of the launch. If you've already got Windows Vista systems in production, and you don't have an antivirus solution that you're happy with for those systems, I don't know what to say about that because the antivirus capabilities are new for Forefront Client Security, so therefore, I can't apologize for not having them as part of the Vista deployment. You'll just want to work with your third-party providers to find a solution that works for you for the time being. I would look to some freeware solutions maybe for the time being, since it seems you're not too interested in the server-side management stuff. Thanks for the question. Bill has one final one, and then I'll close out here. Can all of the server components be installed on a single server, SBS 2003 Premium with SQL 2005, Exchange 2003, and ISA? Is there a document outlining exactly the steps to deploy? No, there is not, because it is not intended for a small business solution. I implied that you might be able to accomplish this. You're missing one of the main components, and that is the MOM component, which I do believe will have difficulty installing on SBS 2003. So I think the answer to your question is going to be, if I'm going to go toe the party line here, is to say, you know, don't install this solution on SBS 2003. And there are no deployment guides for that solution. If you want to play around with it and use it, it's going to require a separate server. It's going to be kind of complex, especially since SBS 2003 isn't going to allow that second server in the same domain. So there are going to be some gotchas for that. Again, I recommend looking to alternate solutions in a very small business, right? Once you start to get to multi-server deployments in a medium and large business, that's where this solution really fits, okay? So I apologize if this didn't meet your needs today, but please let me know in the evaluation form. Tell me what I can do to make it better. Again, come back tomorrow. Got great stuff. If this session confused you a little bit, tomorrow and the next day, parts one and two of the deployments are going to really help to clarify, because we're going to go through each component that you need, how it's installed, what goes on the client side, and I'm going to go through that in pretty good detail. So we're going to be able to clarify a lot of what you might have missed out on, okay? And then come back and maybe watch this troubleshooting session before you do the final deployment. Again, thanks to everybody for coming. I don't see any other questions in the queue. Craig, do you have anything else?
No, if that's good. I would like to extend a special thank you to Sean Tavris for presenting. He is so good that he is coming back tomorrow. So if everyone would like to register for his part three tomorrow, I went and posted that link in the question and answers pane. So if you just scroll to the bottom, you will see the link to go ahead and register for tomorrow's webcast. Thank you again for everyone for attending today's event. We look forward to seeing you again in tomorrow's event. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to conclude our TechNet webcast today. Thank you for joining us. It looks like we did just get a few more questions. I'll go ahead and have Sean answer those via the question and answer text window. So you may now, though, disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.
Hello, thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.